Good morning, everyone, again.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Today I'd like to talk about awareness and how we are in the world and the root of our practice, which is bodhicitta. I'll explain that in a minute. I've been reflecting on the relationship between these three: our awareness, our relationships with others, and the basis of our intention and practice. So I'll start out with some brief definitions. Okay. By practice, I mean our lives, our way of being in the world, our relationship to other beings, the quality of our presence with ourselves and others, and how that impacts all beings. We express this in the formal practice of Zazen, but also in every moment of our lives in relationship to the other people in our lives, the other beings in our lives, the earth, the struggles that we humans go through, the tremendous need that exists in the world right now, and how we support ourselves in relationship to all that. We speak of awareness frequently, and we hear much about its friend, mindfulness. But I think we can ask, what does awareness mean? Basically, awareness is the activity of attending fully, with body, heart, and mind. So it's pretty simple and not so easy. Not if it's meant to transform. So there are several ways we can look at how this takes shape. The practice of awareness in simple and direct ways can enrich our lives. So we can, when we bring our full attention, our body, heart, and mind to each physical moment, we can see the beauty and depth of the world. We can actually hear what's going on. We can appreciate the loveliness of a sunset, the feel of the softness of a pet's fur, the taste of our food, the smell of the ocean. We also see things that we might consider unpleasant or grim: a pile of dirty plastic on the beach. We feel the pain of a stubbed toe or broken heart, the ache of old injuries. We experience the sour taste and smell of something gone rotten. So it's not just the nice stuff that we're aware of. It's also the unpleasant things. And we can begin to appreciate that even the very existence of something can be fascinating when we attend. You know, when we pay attention, something becomes interesting. A bug, the shape of something, the sound of a new bird, or a new kind of electric car. I'm fascinated by the fact that they picked a sound for these new hybrids that goes, oh, it's like, couldn't it have been a nice sound? No. Anyway, that's my judgment, right? But it's interesting. We can think about things. We can see things. We can engage with things in a new way. When we pay attention to our inner experience, what we call our inner experience, we are also aware. We are aware of our thoughts as they come and go, our mental habits, those that bring us refreshment, and those that trap us in judgment and negativity. So we have a chance to actually see these things, not just be run around by them. our emotions come more alive to us. Pema Chodron once said, you know, we practice so that things become more vivid, but then things become more vivid. That's not always easy. So we feel heartache and loss or disappointment. We experience the joy and sense of liberation when we encounter beauty or love or kindness or creativity, the emotional taste of boredom or dullness, the gripping of fear, the ease of relaxation and peace. All of these things come alive to us when we pay attention to our emotional lives. And we become aware of our spiritual depth, that which is life-giving to us and to others, what grounds us and sees us through hard times, what guides us. As we practice awareness, we become more and more awake to impermanence, change, fluidity, and the ways in which things are connected, always, always connected. This development of awareness is excellent, but it's not enough. We must examine the way that we are aware, the way in which awareness informs and transforms our relationship to ourselves and others. To do that, we first make the object of awareness the way we are aware. Tight and judging, kind and spacious, aimed at perfection, or welcoming of the flowering of whatever is present, including the whole of us, not chopping off the bits that we cannot tolerate. We ask, how does the awareness we cultivate impact or not our relationship to others? Human others, non-human others. And not just beings, just living beings, but plants and food and animals and the way that we relate to the soup ladle in our kitchen. How does the awareness we cultivate impact our relational lives? Are we cranky when someone interrupts our awareness practice? And if we are, what do we do about it? How do we include the whole of the world in our awareness? When we discover in ourselves an awareness that is balanced, caring, discerning, we grow in our awareness of ourselves and others, our empathy, our attunement, our capacity to be skillful, our commitment to that which is just in a healthy way, the freedom to apologize when we're not skillful. A sense of confidence emerges, the liberation of a life-giving humility and curiosity. This sense of engagement with others, no matter who they are, and in ourselves, oh, no matter who we are in that moment. This is unwobbly. This is something we can count on. So we attend to how we attend to what we attend, and we attend to what end in terms of our day-to-day lives. Without this practice, this aspect of the practice of awareness, we may become calmer or more aware of what's happening, but we don't change the root delusion that's the source of our suffering. In fact, we can just become more and more skillful at these delusions. And then we really are wobbly, our base is not strong and resilient. We're pushed over, pushed around. So in addition to practicing awareness, we stop and feel the quality of our awareness. We taste it, we touch it, we smell it, we feel it. And we examine and are aware of the impact on our own minds and hearts and on the minds and hearts of others. So we pay attention to the results of our awareness in the wider scheme of things. Is it helpful or not? Not just to us, but to others. There is this relational aspect to our practice, even if we are sitting quietly on a cushion in a room by ourselves. If we bring awareness to this relational dimension of our lives, we see that we can be and often are asleep to it in many ways. And we can choose to gently and thoroughly cultivate clarity and devotion to awareness in all its dimensions. In this way, we are confident that by following this path, we will transform our lives, our relationships, and our world. So we consider the aim of our awareness, that our intention and our practice is guided by our vow to wake up so that we and all beings can realize the Buddha way. We can address suffering. We can transform suffering practically in our day-to-day lives as ourselves and our way of being in the world. So we discover our commitment to that. Our commitment to that becomes real to us. This commitment, at the basis of it, is bodhicitta. Bodhi means awakening. And citta is mind or consciousness. So bodhicitta is the mind of awakening. We can think in terms of cultivating bodhicitta. That's we return again and again to this practice of awakening, this commitment to all beings. But we also return again and again to recalling that this bodhicitta, this mind of awakening, is the basis of our practice. It's the impulse that drew us in the first place. Why did you come here on a Saturday morning? It may be foggy out, but it's not going to be foggy out soon. Why are you here? What calls you here? This is an impulse. Impulse that we pay attention to. It's very deep in us. Central, perhaps. The most central thing in our lives. The wisdom that calls us. That reminds us. That draws us into the true nature of who we are. Like a stream, it carries the self we think we are. It nourishes us and guides us in our way. Maybe it leads us to Colorado. Maybe each morning it brings us to the Zendo. Maybe to cook for those who have little. With generosity of heart and enthusiasm and gratitude. This is bodhicitta alive in our lives. And when discouragement and the pull of bitterness comes, it buoys us. It calls us to remember who we are more deeply than we can imagine. The quiet, deep strength of the mind of awakening is never absent. It is not separate. It is us. Though our theology differs, the Benedictine nun and author Joan Chittister, who I refer to often, captures something of the human experience of this returning. She said, "In every beating heart is a silent undercurrent that calls each of us to the more of ourselves. Like a magnet, it draws a person to a place unknown, to a vision of a wiser life, to the desire to become what I feel I must be but cannot name." You want to hear that again? "In every beating heart is a silent undercurrent that calls each of us to the more of ourselves. Like a magnet, it draws a person to a place unknown, to a vision of a wiser life, to the desire to become what I feel I must be, but cannot name. It's very encouraging and comforting, I think, to know that we do not need to manufacture or earn this central fact of our existence, this stream, this silent undercurrent. It is already there. In a way, we can think of bodhicitta saying to us each moment, I was here all along. I was here all along. In Japanese, this is doshin, the mind of the way. It is the calm of compassion, with caring and sympathy for all beings, and it is wisdom, clear seeing of reality as it is. Our first impulse to practice is full to the brim with these qualities, and we cultivate the ability to be guided by them in our day-to-day lives by recalling our intentions, reminding ourselves of what we are up to really in our lives, and cultivating awareness. Knowing we are often blind to so much of ourselves and others, we become curious, awake, alert, open. We speak with kindness, respect. We do not assume. We come to know we are not only moving towards something we cannot know, we are recalling and being recalled to what is already present. Our practice is all about this process. In Zazen, we turn to awareness over and over. And day to day, we make the process of returning our home base. With other humans, we listen. We return to openness, humility, curiosity. This includes non-sentient beings. We do our best to understand, what do you need? The quality of awareness is the subject that is us in the deepest sense. When we return in this way, we remember ourselves back to the silence at our core, the limitless depth and dynamic breadth that is beyond thinking. And this is very concrete. These words may be lofty, poetic, inspiring, but it's like, what do we do with our neighbors? What do we do with our pets? What do we do? How do we guide our lives? How do we take care of this suffering world? How do we respond? This is limitless, dynamic, beyond thinking. And yet, we live it out in our thinking, our feeling, our actions, our words. What this is cannot be known as an object. Any object we come up with is a designation of our mind. It's not a problem, it's just another designation. But it's only one dimension of our experience. In a sense, there is a mystery to this, and there's also no mystery at all. It's as plain as the nose on your face. It is the fact of deepest intimacy. There is no time or place outside of this practice, no time that we're not alive to it. In our daily lives, we allow ourselves to be recalled to it, if we do. So awareness of the world in our experience of it, an appreciation of each moment, awareness of our inner workings, intimacy with our lived experience, the content, that is our thoughts, emotions, physical sensations, the way in which we structure and prioritize our experience, our habits, intentions, and moral principles, the quality of our interactions with others, the process that everything, including ourselves, is interdependent. And discovering the path in our day-to-day lives, concretely, ordinarily to recall and return to the realization of our deepest reality, that bodhicitta, the mind of awakening, is central to our being, remembering ourselves into a life that reflects, and being alive to this is our way of practice.